Good evening, and welcome once again to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. I'm your host, Jeff Hayden. 2 weeks ago, a planned look at the reemergence of sovereign citizens movement was pushed aside by shocking developments in the Supreme Court, including a leaked draft opinion in a very consequential case. Tonight, we return to the show we had originally planned. A recent morning in a nearby courtroom. Gentleman stands before the court. Tells the court he was traveling rather than driving. Describes himself as a foreign national and not subject to the laws. Went on to say that he was from the nation of the United States. These are claims of sovereignty that go something like, I may live among you, but your laws don't apply to me. What does all this mean for you? Should we care? Joining us to help sort this out is San Mateo attorney David Nazaro. This is an open forum tonight for you to talk to the experts and give us your own thoughts and feelings. So give us a call. Our phone number right here is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're outside the San Francisco Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. Bear in mind that our guests are here to educate. They can't provide legal advice about a particular case, and the opinions expressed here do not necessarily reflect the opinions of them, their employers, their clients, or KALW. There were a couple of callers who took issue with the discussion that we started just a couple weeks ago, but couldn't get through to talk about sovereign citizen given the time devoted to the Supreme Court issue. So I particularly want to reach out to you to join us tonight. Our phone number again is 415-841-4134. And if you're outside of the San Francisco Bay Area, 866-798-8255. And with that, let me welcome you, David Nazaro. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thanks, Jeff. Always a pleasure to be here.
So you and I have spoken about this several times before. And I mentioned a recent experience in a nearby courtroom. How did you become aware of sovereign citizens? And really, how did it come to light?
I had an experience in a courthouse that wasn't completely different from what you just described. Several years ago, I was a court-appointed attorney on the child support contempt calendar in Santa Clara County. And before the courtroom opened one day, I was in the hall, and there was a young, muscular, angry young man in the hall who stopped me and asked me this question: what are my sovereign rights? I did not know how to respond to that. I was thinking that the term sovereign rights referred to the divine rights of kings from the Middle Ages in Europe. So I asked him, what do you mean by sovereign rights? And he gave me a very condescending look and said, you might want to look into that. And so I did.
Now, you've got some background before practicing law. You have some background in Homeland Security. Does this somehow fit in?
I do not have a background in Homeland Security. I studied national security. I have a master's degree in national security studies from California State University, San Bernardino, and I have a master's degree in strategic intelligence from the American Military University. In that capacity, I did formally study terrorism, political extremism, and political fringe movements.
So let's back up. We'll rewind the tape to the beginning, and let me ask you, just what is a sovereign citizen, and why should we care?
Well, it's a great question. There's a long answer and a short answer, and the short answer is a sovereign citizen generally is someone who believes that they are above all laws. The long answer is a bit more complicated. The term sovereign citizen is a catch-all term. It refers to a variety of anti-government individuals and groups who share common beliefs and behaviors. They comprise a fast-growing subculture holding what the Southern Poverty Law Center called truly bizarre, complex, anti-governmental beliefs.
We seem to be talking about a fair number of people and casting a pretty wide net. Is this one group that's organized? Are they different groups?
No, it is not one group. It's a disorganized. It's a number of individuals and groups who are not formally organized, but who share a political point of view that, in its essence, is anti-government. It believes that the government is illegitimate and that the laws of the country are illegitimate and therefore do not apply to them.
So it does cast a pretty wide net. What kinds of people would you describe as sovereign citizens?
Well, there's a wide spectrum. On one end of the spectrum, I would describe sovereign citizens as often very lonely individuals who spend too much time on the internet, who are unhappy with their lives and become radicalized through online indoctrination that they put themselves through. No one forces them to read what they read or listen to what they listen to, but they're attracted to it because the place they are in life is very dissatisfying. On the other end of the spectrum, we are talking about people who are violent and are dangerous, and they may be coming out of the criminal justice system, the prison system. There's a disproportionate number of military veterans who have gone through combat who come back and are dissatisfied and fall into this way of thinking. And it's important to emphasize that this is more of a way of thinking than a formal organization or group.
So some people may think this and latch onto a way that maybe they can finagle around a traffic ticket or even child support, whereas others may actually use this as justification for acts that none of us would condone?
That's correct. There is a spectrum. So on the one extreme of the spectrum are people who wish to frustrate law enforcement at a traffic stop. Also, they try to frustrate the courts and the court personnel by frustrating prosecution of simple traffic tickets or not wanting to pay child support, those kinds of things. They also are known for retaliatory filings. They will file liens on government officials or on people that they don't like. They'll file frivolous lawsuits and do this type of thing. It's important to emphasize that most sovereign citizens are not dangerous. They're merely an annoyance. But those who are dangerous are very, very dangerous. The FBI has called them domestic terrorists. A study that was conducted by the University of Maryland several years ago asked American police officers who they considered to be the greatest threat to them. The study resulted in sovereign citizens being identified as first among extremist groups. Islamic extremists were ranked second.
So we've talked about why we should be fearful of them. What are some of the acts that sovereign citizens I've been known to commit?
Well, on the lower end of the spectrum, like I said, it's mostly paper terrorism. So it's frivolous lawsuits, frivolous liens, frustrations of the courts, not wanting to have a driver's license. They are frequently pulled over and prosecuted for driving on a suspended license or driving unlicensed. They frequently don't pay child support. They won't pay rent and believe that the eviction process is illegitimate. But on the other end of the spectrum, there have been some higher profile acts in the last decade and a half. In 2010, a pilot named Joseph Stack flew his plane into an IRS building in Austin, Texas, killing one and injuring 13. 2 years later, four self-describing sovereign citizens shot four sheriff's deputies, two fatally, in St. John the Baptist, a Louisiana parish. 4 years after that, a Marine veteran named Gavin Long killed three law enforcement officers in Baton Rouge and wounded three others. More recently, in November 2020, a sovereign citizen who also believed in the QAnon conspiracy theory shot and killed Christopher Hallett in Olalla, Florida. Most people might remember just last summer the Rise of the Moors, an organization that was wearing tactical gear and carrying firearms, refused to comply with Massachusetts State Troopers' directions to drop their weapons and run into the woods. A shelter-in-place order was issued, and Interstate 95 was closed until police were able to confirm that the threat had abated. 11 members were arrested in that particular incident. And just a couple months ago, Travis Jeffrey Rinking was convicted for the so-called Waffle House shooting that resulted in four people losing their lives. So on the extreme end of the spectrum, we're talking about events that include bombings, shootings, murders, and armed standoffs.
So I guess my real question is, if we have any idea how many of them are out there, and in asking that question, I understand that it's only hardcore believers that are really likely to be any problem and be on the radar. But do we have any idea how widespread the beliefs are? How widespread are the sympathizers?
Nobody knows for sure. This is a really good question. Estimates have ranged from tens to hundreds of thousands. It's very difficult to identify someone as a sovereign citizen because there's no membership group to join. There's no charismatic national leader. There's no formal organization, no master list of adherents, no consistency in the schemes that sovereign citizens promote or buy into. There are hundreds of similar legal theories that are peddled in seminars, books, and all over the internet. Making this even more complicated, many sovereign citizens don't even call themselves sovereign citizens. There was, however, an estimate made several years ago by the Southern Poverty Law Center that stated that a conservative estimate would place the number of people with sovereign citizen beliefs around 300,000 in the United States.
That's sobering. Did they give an estimate of how many people may be really a hardcore believer?
No, they did not. And again, it's really impossible to know that. There's no way to actually survey this group. If anything, I think the number of 300,000 could very well be low.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 San Francisco Bay Area. I'm Jeff Hayden, and I ask the question, who are these people who live amongst us but don't feel bound by the same laws as you and I? When should we care? Tonight, we're joined by San Mateo attorney David Nazaro, and we're discussing the sovereign citizen movement. If you have questions for my guest, our phone number is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the local dialing area, and again, that's outside the San Francisco Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. As always, you can call regarding any question on tonight's topic. Tonight is the sovereign citizen movement. You're not limited to the point we may be in our conversation, and you don't necessarily have to agree with tonight's guest. I expressed earlier a particular invitation to people that tried to call in 2 weeks ago to take issue with the show, but because of the fast-moving nature of that program, they didn't have a chance to speak on the air. I'm inviting you back. We're very interested in hearing from you. If you have an interest in the sovereign citizen movement, if you have a different viewpoint, we're very interested in hearing from you. Call us again, 415-841-4134. So I asked you a bit about organization in general. Are there different groups of organized sovereign citizens?
They're generally not organized. So that's the key point that I'm trying to make here. These are individuals that typically have a belief system that they find on the internet. The internet is radicalizing individuals with this type of persuasion. There have been organized seminars where there are people who claim to be able to teach someone how to defend themselves in court using this type of ideology. But there is no clear numbers to them.
What I found interested in reading up on this trend, which is a historical trend that keeps resurging, is that it's not limited to the United States. Do you have any information of other places where this same kind of mindset has emerged?
Yes. I haven't studied them in any depth, though. This is not limited to the United States. There are people with similar belief systems throughout the UK, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and even other places. It tends to be the former Anglo-Saxon colonies. It tends to be the larger countries such as the United States, Canada, England, Ireland, Australia, and New Zealand, where this type of mentality is most readily found.
We heard about government activities in parts of the country against, for example, at Ruby Ridge. We heard about similar actions out of the state of Washington. Are these related to the sovereign citizen movement?
There's certainly inspirations for the proliferation of the sovereign citizen movement. So the term sovereign citizen is a vague term. It's a catch-all term. People who are involved in anti-government extremism, anti-government movements, often will have or have been influenced by this type of ideology, though they themselves may not think of themselves as sovereign citizens. This is a kind of mentality that's very common and I believe is growing in recent years.
We speak of it as though it's something fairly recent. Is that the case? Or if it's not, can you tell us a little about the history of the movement?
It's difficult to trace the history of the movement. It certainly came out of the anti-tax movements that have existed in this country for some time. The roots of the movement also were racist and anti-Semitic. In the 1960s, William Porter Gale, a former member of the John Birch Society, formed a group of anti-government Christian identity adherents who mistrusted state and federal officials. They believed that non-white people were not human and that Jews possessed a satanic plot to take over the world. They identified themselves as posse comitatus, which is Latin for power of the county, and centered around the idea that county sheriffs are the highest governmental authority. The idea is based on the Sheriff's Act of 1887, which allowed sheriffs to form a posse that would assist them in hunting down and assisting criminals. Potter's posse believed they served under common law, laws based on their interpretation of the Bible rather than civil law, legitimate laws formed by the American legal system. After the Vietnam War, there was an increase in an influx in the number of veterans and people with some type of military background that found their way into this type of mentality. And it has continued since then. It has been exacerbated by the global pandemic and the resulting lockdowns as more and more people have become dissatisfied with how the government was behaving at that point. So it's something that has existed for a while. But what makes this so difficult to understand as a group is that they don't have a foundational document or text. So often when a new political movement arises, it arises with some type of charismatic leader who often wrote some type of foundational document, some foundational text that became the basis or the blueprint for what would come next. And that just simply didn't happen here.
You made some references to some other groups, some anti-Semitic or white supremacist groups. Is that still the case? Is this movement still associated primarily with white supremacist and anti-Semitic groups?
I don't believe it's identified primarily. I believe that a very large number of people who get into this type of thinking get into it very quickly. There are many people who are not white, who don't identify as Christian, who are involved in this type of thinking. The Rise of the Moors, for example, this is a group that is predominantly African American. And there are other groups that have and individuals who have this type of thinking. When I think it's a little bit intellectually lazy sometimes that if you see someone who's trying to fight a speeding ticket in traffic court, to automatically assume that they're a white nationalist or an anti-government extremist or anti-Semitic or a Christian nationalist. Sometimes they're just people who are very frustrated and fall into this because they're having legal problems or they're angry about the situation in court with their custody and identify with this type of anti-government ideology.
And of course, in talking about some of these folks that are fairly much on the extreme, there's extremists in many groups. And that doesn't mean that people that have a different political belief are necessarily extremists. And in this case, we're talking about people whose beliefs tend to stray to the far right, but not all are extremists in anti-government.
Not all are extremists. Not all are anti-government. Not all are members of the far right. There are members of the far left who tend to also take on this mentality. It's interesting because if you look at one of the tells of the very hard right is a distrust of government, particularly domestically, though they often trust the government to do the right thing internationally. On the hard left, we tend to see the exact opposite. We tend to see that people who view the world this way, they may believe that the government's role domestically can be an inherently positive one, that it can serve as a countervailing force to a lot of social injustice issues. But internationally, they tend not to trust the American government and tend to believe that the American government always operates wrongly in the international arena and tend to have a very positive view of third world dictators, the Soviet Union, North Korea. They can be apologists for these types of countries, but they are very critical of the American government at home. So to answer your question, yes, this movement came out of the hard right. It's associated with the hard right, but it's really wrong nowadays to believe that all sovereign citizens are members of the hard right and identify with hard right issues and beliefs.
One of the beliefs that seems to be core is that the state is not an actual government and might be a corporation. I've seen in the past where people make reference to the UCC. Can you talk a little bit about those things?
Well, yes. I mean, one of the common arguments that is made in court, there's several of them that keep reoccurring. One is that they will make references to the UCC, the Uniform Commercial Code. They will say that they are not entering into a contract with the court or with the government. And they have this belief that so long as you say the magic words, I am not entering into contractual relations with you, that the government does not have jurisdiction. Another corresponding belief is that the courts are run by admiralty law or maritime law, which there doesn't seem to be any. These beliefs are nonsensical, but there is this common belief out there that the courts are governed by contract law or they're governed by admiralty maritime law. And as long as you say the magic words that you are not entering into contractual relations or I don't consent into entering into a contract with you, that the court has no jurisdiction or the police have no jurisdiction if they pull you over.
Are these laws, are these beliefs consistent? Do they seem to have a common framework or are they inconsistent internally?
The consistency is that they are anti-government, that they're anti-court, that they're anti-law enforcement. Those things seem to appear to be reoccurring over and over and over again. On the other hand, when you start to get into the details themselves are contradictory. And the term sovereign citizen itself is a contradiction in terms. If someone lives in the state of California, they are not sovereign. They're not their own country, and they are a citizen of the state and a citizen of the nation that they're in. Sometimes sovereign citizens will say, "Well, I'm moving to Mexico." Well, moving to Mexico, Mexico has jurisdiction over you, so you don't somehow become your own country because you're in Mexico or you move to Africa or some island somewhere. You still have to submit to the laws of the place that you're in. And you've chosen to do that by being there.
Which is a legitimate belief, but there's others that have a different mindset. In a recent jury trial, during the selection of jurors, and selection of jurors is a process where lawyers on both sides or all sides, the court, everyone participates in the selection of the people that have come in as to who's going to be a juror. And one of them, this is a very recent jury trial within the Bay Area, one of the prospective jurors, when asked if she would follow the law, responded that I will follow God's law. And the judge wasted no time in helping her find the door.
Yes, that does not surprise me. So this idea that I will follow God's law is a way to say that there is something higher. There's a higher purpose, a higher power that, and by me saying that I'm only under God's law, that means in their mind that they have somehow trumped the legal system. So if they didn't want to be on the jury of this particular case, saying those magic words appears to have actually worked for them, and they got what they wanted.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. We'll be back right after this.
Hey, I'm Talia Schlanger, in for Tom Power. The Canadian music superstar Avril Lavigne has a new album out, and it's a return to her alt-rock roots. She'll tell you why she thinks her old songs still stand up after 20 years and why authenticity is timeless. That's coming up on Cue from PRX.
From the CBC will be this evening at 7 here on 91.7 FM KALW, San Francisco Bay Area, and online at KALW.org. Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. And if you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's Laura Referral Service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. You can call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information. Now back to Your Legal Rights with Jeff Hayden.
Some of the things that are reported to us that are expressed by self-proclaimed sovereign citizens, and I say it that way because not all the folks that I'm describing truly believe in the doctrine, but may be invoking something they think is to their advantage. But I've heard such beliefs as the law of the sea, admiralty law governing, even those that say that the government's illegitimate as proven by the gold tassels around the flag. Are those truly commonly held beliefs?
Yes, more commonly held than most people would think. And if someone is in the courts, especially in the traffic courts or in courts dealing with child support issues, these beliefs will be articulated. They're articulated more in the South than they are here in the Bay Area. The South tends to be a hot spot for this type of thought. But even here, these thoughts are definitely articulated and articulated regularly.
And even without going into the South, well, the Deep South anyway, places like the Midwest, they tend to thrive. Wasn't there a tie-in between the Oklahoma City bombers and the sovereign citizen movement?
There was some tie-ins. There's been a lot of interesting things that have been written about that particular action. But yes, it does appear that Timothy McVeigh was in fact influenced by this movement and by other similar extreme right leaning movements as well.
And Terry Nichols, I understand, was also tied in with this movement, or a specific offshoot of this movement.
Yes, that's true. Additionally, there are people, you're going back in time a little bit, but even one could say more legitimately in recent times in New Hampshire, there's a state legislator who recently passed away, Representative Richard Marple, who introduced a bill treating sovereign citizens as a recognized legal class, and he proposed a $10,000 fine for state agencies that don't buy into sovereign citizens, their legal make-believe. In 2018, Ryan Bundy ran for governor of Nevada on a sovereign citizen platform that included the sovereign citizen belief in the right to travel. He lost the election, but what this shows is that it's not just extremists from several decades ago. It's people who are running for office in very, very recent, almost contemporary times.
Are there other groups of sovereign citizens or self-described sovereign citizens who might be anti-fascist?
Be described as anti-fascist? Like, how so?
For example, I read recently that Randy Weaver recently passed. We know him from Ruby Ridge standoff. Would that be somebody that described themselves as anti-fascist?
I don't know how Randy Weaver would have described himself. He appears to have come out of, again, an extreme hard right from 30 years ago, which has some correlation and has overlap with the sovereign citizen movement. So his belief system would be probably compatible in many ways. I don't know that he actually was a sovereign citizen.
And some of these examples we're describing may not be in the mainstay of a large movement. These may be extremists. These may be people that believe in obscure offshoots of a larger movement.
Well, let's take, for example, the QAnon conspiracy theory. In 2017, the QAnon conspiracy theory was born when messages from someone calling themselves Q appeared on 8chan. The conspiracy-laden messages continue to influence some of its adherents to join the sovereign citizens movement. So there is clear overlap between QAnon and the sovereign citizens movement. This occurred after sovereign citizens with online followings began making supportive remarks about Q on their social media pages and promoting their own posts with Q-specific hashtags, where we go one, we go all. also, more recently, in 2020, 2021, and currently many sovereign citizens have shared in the conspiracy theories related to COVID-19, have attended anti-mask and anti-vaccine events, helped or ran businesses that defied COVID-19 health mandates. And this is very common in much of the country. Now, of course, someone can run a business in defiance of a government mandate without being a sovereign citizen, but there is overlap between these activities, the anti-mask mentality, the anti-vax mentality, and a lot of the COVID-19 conspiracy theories that proliferated online during the lockdown and the pandemic.
A listener sent in a question, which I can't – it's one that I missed, but I think it's rather interesting. He's asking what, in your opinion, is the ideological opposite of sovereign citizens' tenets?
That's a very interesting question. So it would be someone who believes in the government, for example, someone who believes that government intervention in the economy is inherently a good thing, someone who believes that government programs to alleviate poverty, the war on poverty, is inherently a good thing, someone who probably believes in affirmative action, generally someone who believes that the government's role is a positive one or could be a positive one and believes that government intervention is inherently a good thing.
And probably believes in the greatest good for the greatest number rather than me being above the reach of everyone else.
Yes. Also believes in the legitimacy of the police, believes in the legitimacy of the court system, wants to play wants to play fair, wants to present a case in the court system without resorting to fringe arguments or arguments that they find on the internet, wants to go through bar-associated attorneys. Often sovereign citizens, one of the things that they will do is show up with someone who claims to be their attorney who is not a graduate of a law school, does not belong to a state bar association, and is practicing is in violation of the unauthorized practice of law. That's a common thing. And they tend to have more faith in YouTube videos or videos that can be found on the internet than they do in a law library.
It's interesting. I remember seeing a broadcast many years ago where they spoke of these things. You get a glimpse of something and form an opinion based on that, as opposed to an actual study and seeing something that's more backed up and scientifically approached, and how much harder those quick glimpses are to dispel from somebody than something that's actually sourced out and cited. Let's talk a little bit about the contradictions, both contradicting the movement and contradictions within the movement.
Well, the term itself, sovereign citizen, is a contradiction. And we've talked about this a little bit already. But the contradiction is someone wants to be sovereign and at the same time wants to be a citizen and wants to sometimes use the court system to file liens, to file frivolous lawsuits. And in that sense, wants to believe that the court has some legitimacy, otherwise they wouldn't get the relief that they're asking for. While on the other hand, when sovereign citizens have traffic tickets, child support, child custody issues, they then don't want the courts to be involved and don't believe that the courts are legitimate.
We've been talking from the view from 30,000 feet about the sovereign citizen movement, people that might be extreme or misuse that series of beliefs. What advice do you have for people that believe in the doctrine? They themselves may not be the extremists that you were speaking of, but perhaps they claim to be sovereign citizens. What advice do you have for them?
get off the internet. You're spending too much time on it. Also, just know that this is not a new thing. There's lots of people, if you get a speeding ticket, there's lots of people who've tried this before you. You're not bringing anything brand new to the table. You're not saying anything in court that hasn't been said before. It generally does not work. It often makes things far worse, and you're far better off not falling for these types of beliefs.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. I'm Jeff Hayden. Who are these people who live amongst us but don't feel bound by the same laws as you and I, or any laws at all? Why should we care? Tonight, we're joined by San Mateo attorney David Nazaro. We're discussing the sovereign citizen movement. If you have questions for my guest, if you have an opinion that may differ from my guest, if you want to share your own experience and your belief in the movement, call us. Our phone number is 415-841-4134. Again, 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the San Francisco Bay Area, you could still call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. You can call regarding any question on the sovereign citizen movement, any opinion on the sovereign citizen movement. You don't have to join in the exact point we may be in our conversation. Any thoughts on why this exists and why it is so pervasive?
Yes, the internet provides a platform where there's a marriage between social media in a period of economic instability and rapid change. The pandemic certainly contributed to it with the lockdowns, etc. But sovereign citizen ideology provides an answer. It tells people who to blame and promises a way out. It provides a quick fix to people's problems. It gives them a flush of excitement, a feeling of self-importance, a feeling of power that comes from acting as David against the Goliath. And the Goliath is the U.S. government. This ideology allows people to feel smart. They believe that they've done research, and that's the word they keep using, research, and that the research is correct. They believe their cause is just, and anyone who disagrees with them is just ignorant and not as informed as they are. I think it goes right into the crisis of meaning that's in our society, that the greatest threat to the Western world is nihilism, and that many people today live in our very consumerist culture, our materialistic culture. They are dissatisfied with the overall quality of their life. They do not feel they are participating in the economy, that the economy is rigged, that it's fixed, that people like them are kept out, that they're not able to get the kinds of jobs that they want to get, live the type of lifestyle that they want to live. And on another level, there's a growing discontent with just everyday life here in the United States and in the Western world generally. It could be true in non-Western cultures as well. I don't know. But just a general sense of dissatisfaction that the world is changing and they don't like the changes.
MD from San Jose, you're on the air. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, I was calling in because I'm listening, and honestly, it kind of feels like I'm listening to They Live. Like, you know, the guy puts on the glasses, and I'm hearing this guy talk, and it's kind of surreal. I'm glad that you finally touched on some of the causes that you see of the sovereign citizens movement taking root. But like you haven't spoken at all about the Federal Reserve and the problem there, how it's a private institution. I mean, there's so many things wrong in this country. We've been hijacked. Our elected officials don't even represent us anymore. So these people, they want to represent themselves. And that's the most American thing I can imagine. Taking responsibility for yourself, right? We've been told, no, don't. There's this sort of like philosophy of blame. I'm going to blame everyone. I see the sovereign citizen movement as taking accountability, you know, responsibility for ourselves. Because guess what? The government isn't. They're not. We have a rapid debasement of our currency. It's a huge issue. We don't hear about that on the media at all. They lie to us and say inflation's at 8%. I'll tell you what. I go to the lumber yard, I pay four times that. Four times what I used to. There's a lot going on. I think it should be talked about more. Look, our entire government's hijacked. It didn't pop. Paid off. Let's talk about the issues. And then maybe we can figure out, you know, why these things are coming up. I'm surprised more people aren't pissed. Anyways, I enjoy listening. Thank you.
Well, before you go,
yeah,
I'd like to explore a couple of the things you brought up a little more. And if you're willing to stay with us, we've got probably a good 10 minutes that we could talk further.
Okay, I'm here.
But understand, we are operating without a delay. So I will ask you to be careful and mindful of the language you use, because we don't censor out. So please keep the language clean. But as long as you do so, you can participate with us and nothing will be censored. But I'm curious about a couple of the points you made. I would like you to share with me your thoughts on the Federal Reserve as you brought it up. And then I'll turn to my guest and ask his thoughts on it. And we could do that on some of the stuff you brought up.
Yeah, well, my thoughts are, look, it's a private institution, right? Congress, if you're an act of Congress, they can say they need money, which they did all throughout COVID. Trillions of dollars were printed. And nobody wants to point the finger at the elephant in the room, which is, look, we can't print money. We can't pull money out of thin air. Every time we do that, it debases our currency. It's just the whole situation is just, it feels like all out of our hands. Whether you're on the right, you're the left, it's horrible. If the money that you work for, this is the most important thing, I think. I'm not a sovereign individual or a sovereign citizen or anything like that. But I do have some sympathies for these types of ideas. If you devalue the dollar, that what we work for, to provide for ourselves, if you tax that into oblivion, you're taking away people's ability to live, essentially. The whole thing's a mess. It's all a mess. And nobody's in control. Nobody seems to have any idea what to do about it. I mean, look, Biden is president. He made so many promises to the left about student loan forgiveness and all this stuff. The left should be just as mad as the right. People should be upset. Like I said, I'm not surprised there isn't more sovereign individuals. Maybe we do need more sovereign individuals. Say, hey, look, no more.
I think I understand your point, and if I could sum it up, tell me if I'm off base. But what you're not necessarily legitimizing their positions of sovereign citizens or believing that their paradigm is correct. What you're saying is that some of the frustrations that led to a surge in sovereignty, those observations, those frustrations are very real to a lot of people, and they are. Separate and apart from whether you believe in the paradigm that they're espousing. Is that a fair statement?
Yes, yeah. And I think it really comes down to the money. If they cannot work and get something of value and have it last, it's what are you working for? Do you see what I'm saying? I think it all stems from that.
Absolutely.
That's the biggest issue.
There's an increasing disenfranchise of certain sectors within not just our economy, but our entire country, where people that traditionally perform certain types of labor, people that live in certain areas of the country, have been more and more disenfranchised. And it's pushing more and more people to the various political extremes, not just sovereignty, but to the far left and the far right.
Oh, exactly. Well, look, what you just said, blue-collar workers, Clinton, he sent most of the jobs overseas in the 90s, and they're still going overseas. All the factories in the Midwest, all these places in the South, I hear stories about these companies and factories closing down. I mean, of course, look, are people surprised?
Our media paints that as though it's fairly recent. I should say the commercial media paints that as though it's a fairly recent phenomenon. The truth is, it is an increasingly common phenomenon, but a lot of this began as far back as the Nixon administration. When we get too close to some place whose economy is devalued, whose workers don't make the kind of wages that our workers here have traditionally made, they have a disadvantage. They have us at a disadvantage as far as competing fairly, because they can call out huge numbers of people at next to zero cost. And as long as you don't level the playing field, that creates a big advantage.
For them. Wasn't it Nixon that took us off the gold standard?
It was. That in and of itself is huge, although I don't know if by this point we would have had any gold for a long time if we remained on the gold standard.
Yeah. I don't know what to say. I'm glad before I called, I didn't hear you guys really talking about the causes, but when I was listening on the phone waiting, I heard the guest mention some of the causes. But you really... it feels like we have no voice, right or left. Every time we get shafted, right? I mean, it's really no surprise to me that people, they gravitate towards this stuff. You know, I don't have the answers, but it does frustrate me when someone like your guest, seems to admonish. They only talk about the most extreme cases, like the right-wing terrorists and all that stuff, and you're completely missing the point.
Well, we had a limited topic we were looking at tonight, and we're near the end of the hour, so
okay.
But our Our topic tonight was a very small belief system affecting perhaps a few hundred thousand people within the country, and the effects, the belief system, where they're going. General discontent that led to it is a much broader topic. There's a lot of reasons for discontent. There's no question about that.
Amen.
We were talking about a particular group. There's people on the right, conservatives, that are very angry. There are people on the left, progressives, who can be very angry. There's people in the middle who look both ways and are somewhat stymied right now. But this is a conversation we can have off air. We're really running short on time at the end of the hour. But I very much valued your joining us tonight and enjoyed your thoughts. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Take care.
Thank you, and you as well. And we've really run out of time for additional questions. I did want to give my guest a couple minutes for any closing thoughts, anything you wanted to bring up. And in particular, if you have a minute to address it, what do we do about it? What do we do to try to create a certain amount of normalcy, not just with sovereign citizens, but that's really what we're talking about tonight?
Well, first, in response to the caller, I think the caller was talking about the sources of discontent and not describing the actual movement itself. And that was a little bit off point. It was unfair to say that I only talked about the extreme cases when I was went to pains to say that most sovereign citizens are not members of the most extreme element of of the spectrum, and further that his claim that they're taking responsibility is nonsensical, but not paying child support, not paying a traffic ticket when someone violates the law is certainly not taking responsibility. And these self-represented individuals have every right to run for office and aren't, though there are some who are, and I gave some examples. But generally, I would agree that there's a growing level of discontent within our society, and so long as that is true, we will continue to see people reach out to these types of ideology to find meaning and to express their frustrations.
In essence, it just lives out the expression that desperate times sometimes lead to desperate solutions.
True.
Do you think that January 6th was related to sovereign citizens? And if so, was that just a practice run?
Well, I can't predict the future. I don't know if it's a practice run or not, or even what a practice run would mean. I assume that that would mean that there's some plan for another similar event. I'm unaware of any such plan, though the feelings that led to January 6th, the toxic political culture, the feelings of disempowerment are very real. And for those reasons, when we go into another election cycle, we could very well see something like January 6th again.
The last question I have for you, do you believe that at this point in time, sovereign citizen extremists pose a danger?
Well, they pose a danger to law enforcement because they have, in fact, killed members of law enforcement. So there's no doubt that they pose a danger to some people in this country. However, the overwhelming majority of them, I don't believe, are dangerous.
You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM in the San Francisco Bay Area. Tonight, we've revisited our discussions of the sovereign citizen movement. Our guest tonight has been San Mateo attorney David Nazaro. Our show tonight has been produced by yours truly. Thanks again to our guest, David Nazaro, and our thanks to all of you for joining us. And tonight at the controls, Damian D. Minor. I'm Jeff Hayden. Good night and stay safe.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. And if you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's Law Referral Service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. You can call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information. You're listening to 91.7 KALW, San Francisco, Bay Area.